The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening and welcome to the Lord National Intel Report. I am your host, Steve Elkins, sitting in for John Stadmiller today. Going to bring you another USA Prepares type show, backed by popular demand here. And I have my clone combination of Click and Clack and Bob Vila, broadcasting from an undisclosed bunker deep below the Earth's surface. My co-host tonight, Mr. Vincent Finelli. Vincent, are you there?
Yeah, thanks very much for that glowing introduction. Yeah,
in
that's
the bunker.
I think Michael Savage is deep within the bunker, and it's probably the third bedroom on the left. Same with Rush Limbaugh, same with Sean Hannity. A lot of times,
I can't use the in the bunker down here in Florida.
It's full of water.
I would be in water if I was in the bunker. That's not a good thing with a bucket. So yeah, not a good thing. We're going to do a USA Prepare show again today. We got a full show lined up for you. Vince and I talked earlier today. We got some great stuff for you. But I do want to allow somebody to call in here. They're actually waiting on the line here. And it is a very important topic. And in my life and with RBN and independent media, and we have Mr. Jim Fetzer on the line here to discuss what the Sandy Hook trial. And I need to give you about 10 minutes, and then we need to get back on track here, Jim. But welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much, Steve and Vince. My first radio show is on RBN. I've had about 8 since then, and I'm now on Revolution Radio, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, from 6 to 8 Eastern Time. But I have affection for RBN, and I'm always pleased to have the chance to appear. The situation here in Madison is, situation here is kind of bizarre, but in a way it's going to have, I think, ultimately profound benefits, because the jury, having made such a huge award here for words printed on a page, is causing a tremendous resurgence of interest in the Sandy Hook event. As you or most of you are no doubt aware, I edited a book, Nobody Died in Sandy Hook, with 13 contributors, including 6 current or retired PhD professors. It was published on 20 October 2015 and looked like it was going to sell very well, over 500 copies in less than a month when Amazon banned the book on 19 November without any explanation. I mean, you get this general statement about violating their guidelines, which was very unlikely because the book had been produced with CreateSpace, which is itself a subsidiary of Amazon. It's clear this was a political move, and therefore I released the book for free as a PDF when I went on to the Jeff Rentz show that night. I mean, it was just coincidental. Jeff had it on for quite a few years, and I don't know if it's still there. But it would be a good idea, if you're interested in the subject, to download it at your earliest opportunity, because if I were to be unsuccessful in my appeal of this decision, I suspect I would have to, as a condition for emancipation, to do everything I could to have the book removed, which would be a bloody pity, because it demonstrates beyond any doubt that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, and that it was a A FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Indeed, one of our other contributors, Paul Preston, rather well known for his Agenda 21 radio show, is a school administrator to actually supervise some of these drills. And he was so disturbed by what he saw broadcast from Newtown that day that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him it had been a drill. No students had died, and it was done to promote gun control.
Yeah, Jim, I know Paul Preston. Jim, I know Paul Preston quite well. I've worked with him in the past on many different topics. We did talk about this. But what Paul brought to my attention was being a past school administrator, he mentioned that there were no work orders at all in that school. We know how kids break the heck out of everything. So that was he pointed that out. There were absolutely no work orders in this school, which means that the school was not operating at all. So that was a key red flag that caught my attention and he brought to my attention. Any more on that? Can you bring any more attention to that?
Oh, I think that's terrific. Well, there's so many anomalies here. In fact, we even have the FEMA manual for the exercise. It was a two-day event beginning on the 13th. Turns out that events on the ground were confirmation. There was a sign, everyone must check in. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in with a controller upon arrival. There were porta potties already in place, bottled water and pizza available at the firehouse. It's standard for FEMA exercises that they provide both refreshments and restrooms. I asked experienced New York City detective if he'd ever heard of a crime scene where they had porta potties and, you know, a sign and all that. And he thought it was ridiculous, completely laughable. Then there were many, many there with name tags on lanyards, which is how FEMA identifies their participants, name tags that are color-coded. And parents were bringing children to the scene. Well, it's completely absurd to imagine a parent would bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre. So that was because this was a festive occasion, and they were treating it, you know, as a kind of celebration, a community event. The following day, when the shooting was supposed to have taken place, there was no surge of EMTs into the building, no ambulances to rush the little bodies off to hospitals where they could be determined to be dead or alive. In fact, anyone with medical experience knows it's a major tell that they allegedly left the bodies overnight in the classroom. The parents weren't even allowed to see them, but identified them on the basis of photographs, which turns out to have been a key aspect of this, because it turns out that in relation to Leonard Posner, the alleged parent who has sued me here, that the photograph of his son, Noah, was actually made up out of photographs of a person, Michael Vabner, who's supposed to be his older stepbrother. As we have been able to demonstrate by thorough research, they have the same eyes, the same eyebrows, the same nose, the same mouth, the same ears, the same shape of skull. A brilliant researcher on JFK by the name of Larry Rivera, who has mastered the techniques of superposition for identity, so you can confirm or disconfirm whether two photographs or photographs of the same person that different in different situations, perhaps even years apart and so forth, created a GIF where you can see Noah Posner turned into Michael Vabner. They didn't even call a medevac helicopter. They put up triage tarps, but it was just for show. No bodies were placed on them. I mean, it goes on. The proof is simply overwhelming. We also have afterwards, the book was published in the first edition in 2015 and in a second edition in 2016. More recent research has confirmed what we found. If you go to the website of Robert David Steele, Steele, he edited a memorandum, a Sandy Hook memoranda series for the President of the United States that you can download for free, just as you can the PDF. And you'll find there are about 32 relatively brief memoranda, each three or four pages, that are the most recent research on Sandy Hook. And when you compare the two, you see the research from 2018 confirms what we had already discovered in 2015. I mean, we turned out to have made very few mistakes. One that we did was very relatively minor about when a photograph was taken, and I mention this specifically because it's probably the most devastating proof that this was a fraud of them all. In Chapter 7 of the book, and both in the first and second editions are the same for most of the chapters, you have 50 photographs in Chapter 7 of them furnishing an empty house to be the Adam Lawns resident. Then in Chapter 8, we have 50 more photographs of them refurbishing the school to serve as a stage, where this utterly fascinating photograph appears of what I initially thought was a SWAT team vehicle already there. You can tell it's before the shooting, because after the shooting, there's a string of four windows in Classroom 10 that would be shot out, but here they're undamaged. The flag is at full mast. You come down, and there's a familiar figure leaning against the wall with his arms folded, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent, Dr. Wayne Carver, and there's crime scene tape up, a crime that is yet to be committed. We initially thought it was taken the morning of the 14th, but it actually turned out to be taken the evening of the 13th based upon shadow analysis. So, you know, if we discover we've made mistakes, we would correct them. Indeed, in relation to the death certificate issue, a couple of the reasons I had concluded the death certificate was a fabrication, which, of course, everyone would conclude once you know that nobody died, any death certificate for a Sandy Hook victim must be a fabrication. But it included multiplicity of type, fonts, and sizes, and it included a shaded background, made it look as though my initial impression was it was a combination of the bottom half of a real death certificate with the top half of a fake. Having gone through the court case, I know much more about death certificates, and in fact, three different parties, the medical examiner and the funeral director and then the town registrar of vital statistics, fill out, which explains the three different typefaces. The shaded part is for the medical examiner to fill in, Dr. Carver. So some of our reasons for concluding it was a fabrication are wrong, but it turns out, and this is a death certificate that Posner made available to Kelly Watt by way of the internet. He posted it for her in 2014. It has no state, no town certification, has no file number. That's the document we published in the book. Oddly enough, when they sued me and my co-editor, Mike Palachuk, and the publisher, they attached a death certificate from 2013. It had both a file number, it had the state and town certification, and it had changes that Lenny Posner himself had made in 2013. So even when he shared it with Kelly in 2014, he didn't give her the current version, but rather one that was not certified and therefore in violation of Connecticut law, and where in addition I elicited the benefits of two forensic document examiners who in their reports both certified not only that that death certificate was a fabrication, but three others that had surfaced in the course of the trial were also fabrications, which the judge in this case merely set aside as opinions and went ahead and made his ruling in a summary judgment of liability for defamation, because the claim that the death certificates were fabricated was, in his conclusion, false. When I had a mass of evidence they were true, this will be a key element of our appeal of this absurd verdict, but what it's done is resurrect tremendous interest in Sandy Hook, and I think that's all to the good.
Yeah. Now, Jim, inform us, I believe, did I not hear that they actually tore down the school, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wolfgang Helbig, the former Florida State Trooper, U.S. Customs Agent, school principal, and nationally recognized school safety expert, and I traveled together to Newtown in 2014. They'd already destroyed the school. They got a $50,000 grant to build a new school. Well, we concluded it had been abandoned by 2008. In fact, among the earliest reports was local residents were saying they were surprised that there were any students there because the school had been abandoned. And, you know, it was in deplorable condition, mold, cracks, watermarks. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards and right. Damaged by a hurricane. In fact, there turned out to be a major flood in the area in 2007. But, yes, they tore it down and they got a $50 million grant to build a new school. I thought that was very peculiar and looked into the matter and found the average cost for a kindergarten through fourth grade school, which is all this was, is $7 million. So they got seven times the normal cost to rebuild a school at Sandy Hook. I said, was this to be the Taj Mahal of elementary schools? And in fact, it's rather gaudy looking. It has a lot of artistic, you know, totally unnecessary, that you can pay any amount of money you want. Sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed, by our best estimates, between $27 and $130 million, which if you divide it between the 26 families that were involved here in claiming they'd lost children or loved ones, works out to between $1 and $5 million apiece for pretending to have lost a child at Sandy Hook. Look at the evidence. It's not even a close call. Interestingly, even the FBI, in its consolidated crime report for 2012, reported that the number of murders in Newtown, of which Sandy Hook is a subdivision, was zero. Zilch. Nada. None.
It's interesting. Yeah, like I said, Paul Preston and I talked about this. This school was not an active school. And he did mention the black mold or some kind of mold problem. The school was shut down. Yeah. And no work orders. I'm glad you brought up the settlement, the money that was raised. I think it was $27 million. And how this whole thing fabricated. These people are well off. They've all moved out of town, I understand. And nobody can be found. The children are not located. They're out of sight, out of mind. Jim, I got, when we finish here, I'm going to let you go to the bottom of the hour and we can still talk about this some more, then we need to move on. But I definitely want you, when you're done here on the show today, stay over, give your telephone number, contact information to Michael, the board op, and you and I need to have a long talk and, about a future guest on my show. I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I'd be delighted. Sure. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Well, there were so many odd aspects to this trial and the jury. They were very young. I don't believe they knew anything about any of this. In fact, they claimed during the voir dire, the jury selection, none of them said they'd even ever heard of Alex Jones. They had a videotaped interview with a psychiatrist who is claiming that based upon an hour or two conversation with Leonard Posner and what he'd been told by his attorney, that he suffered from PTSD. And get this, it's quite remarkable that Lenny has spent a tremendous amount of time going aggressively into the internet. He's taken down over 1,555 YouTube videos, for example. He has boasted on the air on a radio interview that he's been responsible for taking down tens of thousands of content items from the internet, because one of the symptoms of PTSD is avoidance, that you avoid anything that reminds you of the traumatic incident that is supposed to have precipitated your state. Interestingly, this doctor claimed that Leonard Posner was recovering from the loss of his son as though that were a transient phenomenon, that by 2014 he was alive and well and going to survive and thrive, but that because of my declaration that the death certificate was fraudulent, which they have twisted repeatedly into the claim that I say he had faked it, that he had manufactured the death certificate, which is not a part of my claim. I only addressed whether it was authentic or not, and it's clearly, provably not authentic, and also that I've been harassing Leonard Posner when I never had any contact with Leonard Posner. The doctor said that I'd had phone calls with Leonard Posner. I've never had a phone call with Leonard Posner. He said Alex Jones was inspired by my ideas. They say Alex Jones took Dr. Fetzer's idea and spread them worldwide. Well, Alex Jones, in his recent video deposition for a lawsuit brought by Sandy Hook parents in Connecticut, said he'd never read the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. And, of course, he's never featured me on his show about Sandy Hook. In fact, he's never featured me on his show once. He has featured Wolfgang Halbig, however. But the point I'm making is this. The doctor was basing his diagnosis about statements regarding me and Leonard Posner that were false. I mean, it's completely concocted. It can't possibly have a serious significance. I was very, very troubled because the causal properties involved here are so distant and ephemeral. They also rolled in Lucy Richards. I mean, they did several things to emotionally sway the jury. They put up a photograph of Noah Posner, and he was an extremely photographic kid. And if you didn't know that it's actually a photo of Michael Vabner when he was a child, you might swoon and think, oh, what a shame this dear child died. They played a couple of audio reports from voicemail that a woman named Lucy Richard, who is a bit deranged, who is confined to a wheelchair, had left for Leonard Posner as though I had anything to do with that. It's peculiar, too, that they claim that the doctor claimed that Lenny's deterioration began in 2014. Well, the book wasn't even published until 2015. I don't know how Lenny Posner even discovered it was there, but he's acknowledged he never even read the book. So the doctor obviously hadn't read the book. I mean, it's just astounding to me how many people think they know what happened at Sandy Hook when they haven't a clue. They've never bothered to do any research. This book, it's 446 pages. As I observed, 13 contributors, some of whom had vast experience research in Sandy Hook before I published a book. Dr. Eowyn, for example, had already published 80 articles about Sandy Hook. I myself had published 30 articles about Sandy Hook. And, by the way, we even included the FEMA manual as Appendix A to the book, so you can check it out. And you can see we have a lot of photographs of the school in its deplorable state. We've had interesting independent confirmation, too, from unexpected sources about what was going on here. The Obama administration nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that were being used without by the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. In other words, Barack Obama legitimized, made legal, perpetrating these staged stunts on the American people. Now, when the book was banned, Mike and I realized that we had to find another outlet, and we founded Moon Rock Books. And with Moon Rock Books now, Mike and I have collaborated on 9 other books. Then we have 3 in addition by sole authors. One about JFK by Larry Rivera, the very guy who did that comparison study where he explains how he was able to prove that Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository when the JFK motorcade passed by, conclusive proof that he not only cannot have been the lone demented gunman, but cannot have been one of the shooters, where I and Ole Domegaard have identified 7 of the shooters. I can give you their name, rank, serial number, where they positioned, what shot they fired, and the effects they had. And we discovered there was yet an 8th. 7 of them, we know their identity. The 8th shooter, which was on the south knoll behind this rather skinny tree, was in addition to those we've identified, where I've seen photographs from 2 JFK experts, Rick Russo and Ed Tatro, different photographs of the same shooter, so there's no doubt he was there. That's one of the...
Jim, I want to stop you there. Jim, let's head back to Sandy Hook here. My co-host here, Vincent Finelli, has a couple questions for you. Let's lead back into the Sandy Hook here from JFK.
Yes. Go ahead, Vincent. Just going to say that, you know, Amazon has subsequently banned 5 more of our books. So we have 12 books, and they have now, in addition, banned the book about the Boston bombing. They banned a book about the moon landing. They banned a book about Orlando and Dallas. They banned a book about Charlottesville. They banned a book about Parkland. Frankly, this is a form of validation I've never seen before. In each of these instances, I brought a collection of experts together to sort out what really happened.
Yeah. Well, we've seen that happen in the past. Now, Amazon is definitely going in that direction to scrutinize and censor what they don't want us to know. So I appreciate bringing that to our attention. Vincent, you got some questions for Jim.
I got a couple quick questions. Yes. Hi, Jim. Blood on the floor, on the tiles, was any of that brought in as evidence during the trial?
Well, this is very interesting. My co-author of Chapter 11, which was in response to an article that Lenny Posner, an op-ed piece, had published in the Hartford Courant, suggesting that Sandy Hook skeptics were demented with twisted minds, has her own home and commercial cleaning service, so she knew that blood is a biohazard. Kelly just thought, although at the time she believed it was real, that a good question was who cleaned up the blood. So she began making telephone inquiries to state agencies. No one could answer. Eventually, she was put in contact with Lieutenant Paul Vance in charge of the Connecticut State Police, who had warned the public during the press conference with Wayne Carver that anyone who questioned the official narrative would be prosecuted. I mean, how peculiar is that? And when she asked Lieutenant Vance who cleaned up the blood, his reply was, "What blood?" There wasn't any blood. In fact, they made the construction workers who were responsible for taking down the old school sign lifetime gag orders, so they couldn't discuss anything they had seen or had not seen, which would have included no blood on the floors and no pockmarks on the wall.
Yeah. Okay. And another question. The penalty for fabrication or committing fraud regarding a death certificate, sometimes doctors do it, sometimes people do it for insurance purposes. The penalty, as I understand it, it's a felony. We're talking prison time to alter or fabricate or commit fraud in a death certificate. How many people are involved in fabrication?
It was a big deal. You had Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder, who traveled to Connecticut and met with the governor on the 27th of November to tell him what they had in mind. Eric Holder, we have a video of him talking to a National Democratic Women's Convention back in 1995, where he was telling them, we have to brainwash the American people to change their attitude toward guns. I believe this Sandy Hook effort was an example of the brainwashing. It appears to have been a capstone event. Sophia Smallstrom was the first to notice this, in which FEMA organizes an event with a community and pays them millions of dollars to conduct a drill of this kind, and the community is not responsible for how it's understood or interpreted by the press. In other words, it's a setup. And that appears to be exactly what went down. Debbie Aurelia, who is the town clerk for Newtown, entered into secret negotiations with the state legislature so that she could circumvent releasing death certificates for children, knowing, as you're suggesting, that the issuance of a fake death certificate is a crime. So the state legislature, the governor, the whole op appears to have been run behind the scenes by the Connecticut State Police. So, okay. You know, it was formerly a FEMA ex. Go ahead.
I've got another question, Jim. Adam Lanza, he looked zoned out. I don't know what the term would be to describe the facial expression that young man had, or at least it appeared that he had, based on the images that have been circulating around the internet. What's up with that? Why does he look like that? He looks different from every individual I've ever seen on the planet.
Yeah, what they did was to take a skull and just paint it so it would have some kind of haunting image. Adam Lanza appears to be just as fictional as Noah Posner. No children, no adults died at Sandy Hook. It's embarrassingly bad. In relation to the trial, by the way, when I first answered the complaint, I outlined two lines of argument I was going to present, namely the massive proof I've been sketching here that nobody died at Sandy Hook because it was a FEMA exercise, which meant that any death certificate for alleged victims would have to be a fabrication, but also those more specific points about the death certificate. The judge would not allow me. He ruled out the massive evidence I have in the book, for example, and elsewhere, including now the new 2018 memoranda you can find for the President of the United States on Robert David Steele's website. He would not allow me to introduce any of that evidence, which I think right off the bat is, you know, putting a stranglehold on a defendant's ability to defend himself, which I find completely inappropriate. So
He denied you, Jim, he denied you due process. He denied you due process, that judge did.
Yes, you got it, Vince, and I'll stick around.
Yeah, please stick around. We'll be right back. This is the National Intel Report. We got Jim Fetzer. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website, by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And we are back. This is the National Intel Report. Steve Elkins sitting in for John Stadmiller today. And joining me is Mr. Vincent Finelli. And we are speaking with Jim Fitzer about his book and his trial. He just finished up Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Jim, I'm going to give you a couple questions here. And I do need to save these questions, a lot of these answers, for when you're on my program to talk about it. But I do want to mention that a little message here from John Stadmiller, owner of this network, is saying thank you for standing up and not folding like Alex Jones. I do appreciate you also for standing up for the truth of what really happened there and the Boston bombing and other things. Thank you for being a stand-up guy and not folding. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
That means a lot. In independent media, you know, we stand up for what we believe, and we're accountable for what we say. And if we make a mistake, we come back and we say, hey, I got it wrong. But you don't see that in the mainstream media. And I just want to say thank you again for being a stand-up kind of guy and investigating this and bringing the attention. I'm going to leave you with a couple things here. We kind of have to move on with some other things, Jim. Please give your number to Michael when you leave here. But I just want to give you some things to think about when you're on my show here. There is a massive record trail here, and I just hope that your attorney and the appeal will bring these things in. A record trail with a mass shooting, EMS, you got choppers, you got ambulances, you've got pictures, you've got the transport people, you've got ER personnel, you've got the notes from the physician in the ER, you've got nurses who were present who saw all this. All those ER personnel are right there. I hope in your appeal, in due process, you are allowed to bring all this information to defend yourself. If they do not allow you to do so, then we know this is a kangaroo court. So in the appeal, I hope you kick your attorney in the rear end to say, you got to push these issues here big time.
Yeah, well, the appeals are based on the trial record, so you can't bring in new issues. You have to base it on evidence that was or was not, or procedures that were or were not followed or admitted during the course of the trial, decisions made by the judge. I believe there are a significant number, probably a half a dozen most important rulings that are disputable, where, in my opinion, the judge ruled improperly and denied me my due process, my opportunity to present a defense. So I actually believe, as does my attorney and other attorneys who have discussed this with me, that the appeal is very strong. And, you know, there's just a multiplicity of grounds that will be covered, but you're not allowed to introduce new evidence at the stage of the appeal.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on my show today to give us the updates, what happened. I was kind of wondering about that. Actually, I have you in my Cardex right here, Jim. I just don't have a telephone number with it to give you a call.
Sure.
But please leave your number with Michael, the board op, and I will be talking to you the next day or so.
Well, let me just add that.
Vincent has another question for you. Go ahead, Vince.
Jim, just a simple question. So Newtown, Connecticut, has a population of about 27,500 as of the 2010 census. Did any of the residents of Newtown, Connecticut, witness anything? Or do they have amnesia? Or is it an Alzheimer's zone? What happened with witnesses?
Well, I don't think there was really much to see at the school. As I mentioned before, we did have local residents. There was a report from InfoWars, a guy on the scene, that they were surprised that any students were there because the school had been abandoned. We had the mayor of Boston, by the way, on a program just a month before Sandy Hook, who was boasting of his relationship with Joe Biden. The program was hosted by Andy Rooney's daughter, and he was saying how he'd learned from Joe Biden that gun control would be a done deal by January 2013. She was, of course, kind of stunned by that and said, what could possibly happen for legislation to pass so fast? He wouldn't answer, but we know now, because Biden was in on it, as were Obama, Eric Holder, the governor, the state police, and FEMA. It was quite an elaborate operation, a major scam on the American people.
Jim, why was the school abandoned and when?
Well, it was abandoned by 2008 because it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards damaged by hurricane. There was also a major flood in the area in 2007. It was not inhabitable. It was not suitable. In fact, we had another independent report from a construction worker who had been in Monroe, which was not very far distant, who didn't realize his host was going over to the school to pick up some desks, student desks, for his own children to use at home on the cheap. And when he got over there, he said the place was a complete disaster. The caretaker explained that the school was abandoned and they were going to be tearing it down. So here you had independent confirmation out of the blue from a guy who was there in 2007. It was closed by 2008, but Wolfgang Helbig has discovered they were conducting an administrative con to make it look as though it were still active by having records for food deliveries, for example, to Sandy Hook Elementary School, but they were actually being delivered to another school in Monroe itself that they were using as a cover story for Sandy Hook.
Jim, I absolutely agree with you about the cost to build a school. I know for a fact that you can build a middle school for about $6 million, because I was involved in one building one in 1993. $50 million. I can't imagine how you could spend that much without payoffs, bribes, grafting, and so forth. It's difficult to spend 7x.
Yeah, everyone was getting, making big bucks off of this. That was part of the motivation. By the way, just for your audience understanding about who I am, I had a 35-year career as an academician. I was a professor of philosophy. I published over 36 books. I was a Marine Corps officer. I resigned my commission as a captain to enter graduate school. At one point, I was a series commander. I had 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command going through the training cycle at the San Diego Recruit Depot. I have received many awards and distinctions for my research and scholarship, and I have specialized in bringing together experts on the various of these cases we're talking about, where you can find the results of our research at moonrockbooks.com. But bear in mind, they're doing their best to bury them. Amazon, as I mentioned already, has banned 6 of our 12 books. So if you have an interest in what really happened in any of these events, you might want to make a visit and check it out.
Yeah, I'd love to have you come on my radio broadcast. It's called USA Prepares, and it's also broadcast on Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'd like to talk with you about the moon landing hoax.
Yeah, so sure. My pleasure. Glad to. Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jim, for calling in and give us the updates. Please, like I said, give your number to Michael, the board op, and I will be calling in the next day or so. And thanks again. I appreciate you coming on and give us the updates. Thank you, Jim.
My great pleasure. Thanks so much.
Got it. Thank you. Whew. I have so many questions for him. So many questions, actually, for Wolfgang Halbig also. Well, let's try to get back on track. Today, Vincent, I sent you an email about what's going on in the Midwest and what they are theorizing, what kind of winter you guys are going to have. And I think you pretty much agree, you're going to have a hard winter this year. It's going to be a hard winter, Midwest and East Coast. And with that, we're going to see some shortages. I guess there's a lot of harvesting that didn't get done. You told me your hay yourself. Well, you have another 50 acres of hay you need to bale, and it's on the ground. It's all wet. You can't bale it until it dries. Yeah. But along with the hay, which feeds the animals, there was a shortage of hay, and now there's an excess of hay, and people cut their herd size down, which you did. I anticipate some shortages, beef shortages big time this year. I think we're going to see some beef prices go really cheap, and then we're going to see a scarcity, and the prices go real high. And getting along with that, with the scarcity and shortages, I wanted to talk about the hard winter and kind of what we might expect, what we should be doing with winter rising our cars, and because we got to go to point A to point B, we've got to go to work. I'm in a nice spot down here. I don't worry about the harsh weather. We have heat, but we don't have cold. We don't have ice. We don't have snow. I kind of want to go in that direction for a little while. And let's break it down a little bit here, talk about oils, talk about tires, talk about the thing you told me about today I had no knowledge of. It's the VVT, the variable valve timing. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the oil, Vince? Where do you want to go with this?
Let's talk about variable valve timing. Let's get that out of the way. So sure. Internal combustion engines, four-cycle automobile engines, that are powered by gasoline have a camshaft, and the camshaft times when the valves open and when they close. And there's a difference in when they should open in terms of volumetric efficiency and thermodynamic efficiency based on the operating RPM of the engine at that time. So if you're just idling, you want to have the camshaft retarded more than if the engine's running at a high speed going down the highway. So there's an optimum cam timing for the speed of the engine and the load of the engine. And it used to be back in the early days of the automobile engine, all the way up through, let's say, till the last 20 years or so, that camshafts were statically timed. There was no movement in the camshaft in terms of relation to the engine speed. They turned at the same speed all the time, whether the engine was idling or racing. Well, there was a new technology, and it's called variable valve timing. A lot of Asian cars have variable valve timing, and so do American cars. And the idea was to optimize the opening and closing of the intake and exhaust valves based on what the computer determines is the best position for the valves right then and there, instantaneously, if you will, or almost. Well, in order for this valve, a variable valve timing to work, it works on solenoids that control the flow of oil from the oil pump. There are microscopic, almost, holes that the oil has to travel through in order to make the system work. So if the engines get sludge in them, that system will shut down. And when that shuts down, the efficiency of the engine shuts down. The amount of fuel that you consume goes up. The catalytic converters can plug up. So you could have a cascading series of failures. And it's really easy to prevent this. All you have to do is change the oil on time. It's as simple as that. And use the right oil, of course. So what I'm saying is I saw the worst case scenario of engine oil that I've ever seen yesterday. A vehicle showed up here at the farm, and what happens is people, I don't know, talk to each other, and they go, you know, look, if you want your car fixed right, you go to these guys over at this farm, and people just bring their vehicles. So a gal bought a new General Motors V6 2008 variable valve timing, and the engine holds roughly 6 quarts of oil. So our son put it up on the lift, and out came 2.5 quarts of oil. 2.5. It holds about 6. Absolutely the minimum amount of oil to prevent destruction of the engine. And the oil was as black as could be. I've never seen worse condition oil. So what we decided, my son and I talked about it, and the answer was pretty simple. Of course, do a fresh oil change. Put in some high mileage oil with more detergents than regular oil would have, and then change it in 1,000 miles. Drain it all out. Right. And hopefully the variable valve timing solenoids and those small passages through which the oil travels will be cleaned out, and there will be no more engine damage and everything will be fine. So all I'm saying is, as a matter of preparedness, if you have an Asian car, and if you don't want to have problems that are really expensive, we're talking $1,000 maybe to fix this, all you have to do is change the oil and use the correct oil. And actually, you had a question for me about when do you change the oil, right, Steve?
Yeah, the conventional oil versus the synthetic. I was always told you change the conventional oil about every 3,000 miles, and I was told with synthetic, high quality synthetic oil, about 5,000 miles. But then you told me it all depends where you live. So go ahead and break that down a little bit.
Okay. So for example, you live in Florida, and I'll bet you don't have massive dust storms down there. I'll bet the weather's nice most of the time. You hardly ever have a freeze. And so your engine, when you go out there, is probably 70 degrees or more, because the ambient temperature is 70 degrees or more most of the time. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So your engine does not have the potential, compared to out here in Missouri or in Montana or Idaho, for developing moisture condensing inside the engine. Here's what happens. So there's plenty of air inside your engine, around the inside of the crankcase, on top of the oil pan, in the heads, under the valve covers. There's plenty of air in there. And all of that air has moisture in it. So overnight, let's say in Missouri, when the temperature goes from warm to cool, really cool at night, that air with the moisture in it inside the engine will condense the moisture along the cooler surfaces, like, the pistons, the cylinder walls, the block, and so forth. So that moisture turns to water droplets, and gravity helps it get down into the oil pan, and it mixes with the engine oil. And when you start the engine, you have oil mixed with water. Water doesn't lubricate worth a darn. and it will kind of foam up a little bit, and that doesn't lubricate worth the darn. So what you're doing is you're using a foam to lubricate your engine, and it doesn't work. So if you have a condition where you have lots of cool weather and you have very few long trips where that engine temperature will boil off the moisture, if you will, or volatilize the moisture, if you don't have that, then you need to change your oil more often, like the 3,000 interval. If you have long trips, and if you're using synthetic oil, 5,000 sounds great. But if you live on a dusty road like we do, where there's dust in the air, and like if you remember Bonnie and Clyde racing down those dirt roads, that's what our road's like here in Missouri. We're in dust all the time. 3,000 miles is where it's at because of the dust getting into the engines.
We'll be back after this short commercial break. Vincent and I are doing a USA Prepares show. We'll be right back after this short commercial break.
Hey, this check is wrong. I worked a holiday and 7 hours of overtime. Not getting paid correctly is a real pain. It could also hurt our boss if our company provides out-of-compliance checks. That's right. Construction companies doing business with the government can get fined, or officials of the companies can go to jail if the checks aren't right. It's a law. The Davis-Bacon Act has 30 compliance issues for every check, but there is an easy way for construction companies to be in compliance. EMARS offers Compliant Client, a web-based system that finds and corrects all 30 of the possible out-of-compliance check issues. Users of Compliant Client report an 80% savings in time and money. Running a weekly payroll usually takes about 5 minutes. All 15,000-plus clients of EMARS have never had a legal compliance issue. Plus, they sleep better on check day. Contact EMARS at emarsinc.com or call 480-595-0466.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Take a little time to think things over.
And we are back. This is the National Intel Report. Steve Elkin sitting in for John Stadmiller, and I have my good friend and broadcaster on GCN and on RBN, Mr. Vincent Finelli, with his show USA Prepares, which he comes on at 6 o'clock in the morning here, Tuesday through, I think, Friday. Isn't that right, Vincent?
That's Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday? Okay. By the way, phone lines are open, 1-800-313-9443. Any calls to Vincent or myself? We're discussing how to winterize our cars. We're talking about oil changes and the kind of oil to use versus conventional oil versus synthetic oil. I am a big fan of synthetic oil. And when I was out at your house, Vincent, you taught me something new, that to fill my, actually my canister, my oil, filter itself with oil before I put it back on there, which I did not know. I did the seal, make sure it doesn't stick, and did all that right, but I did not know to actually fill up the oil filter itself to put it back on. I mentioned earlier on, I talked about gunk. A lot of people don't know what this stuff is. It's kind of a high detergent oil additive to kind of clean your engine out, and the hazards of it, the good and the bad. So, Vincent, let's go ahead and discuss that a little bit, if that's all right with you.
Okay, so the way that works is you would add this detergent, if you will, a solvent, to your engine oil before you change your oil. So you start with a cold engine, you pour in this gunk liquid, and it will dissolve some of the sludge. And that's a good thing for the most part, except there are some risks in doing that. And here's what they are. So you don't want to start with a brand new oil change and then add this and then this gunk and then run your engine for 5 minutes and then shut it off and then drain out that oil. So typically what's done is it's added to the oil that's already in the engine, ready for an oil change. So it's at the point where we've got the oil change ready to go anyway. So you add this, you run it for 5 minutes. And what happens is it loosens some of the sludge, if there is any. And that sludge gets caught by the oil filter until the oil filter plugs up. And then it stops getting caught by the oil filter. And the idea then is to immediately drain the oil and take off the oil filter. The idea meaning you are going to drain all the oil out with the extra sludge that was not captured and trapped by the oil filter. And I would let it drain overnight as a minimum. Now, so you do this on a weekend. Maybe start Friday night, and if you can, wait until Sunday afternoon to put fresh oil in. But the problem with doing this is it's risky because there will be a continuing loosening of that sludge even with the new oil. And your new oil filter may not be able to capture all of it. Your new oil filter may get plugged up. Now, there's a safety system in most oil filters, and it's called a bypass valve. The idea is that when your oil filter gets plugged up, the bypass valve will open up and allow dirty oil to circulate and lubricate the engine, because dirty oil is better than no oil.
That's true. That's true. Second hour coming up, National Intel Report. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.